the Healing Through Love podcast with Charlene Lynch and Rose Davidson. Join Stephanie Ann as she shares her journey of recognizing and overcoming narcissistic abuse in episode 111.
And so during the devaluation, the manipulation, the gaslighting. Now, gaslighting is a word that is thrown around a lot right now. But what is gaslighting? Gaslighting is when you manipulate another person into doubting their perceptions, experience, or understanding of events. It's a form of emotional abuse. In fact, it is a highly calculated form of abuse, of manipulation. It's coercive control. And why do they gaslight? They gaslight because it helps them avoid any responsibility. If they can flip the script and say, that didn't happen that way, you were crazy, you drank a lot last night, don't you remember how much you were drinking? You're being a little crazy, you're the crazy one, not me. Mm. If they can flip it around, then they can avoid all responsibility and they put all of that on you. Mm. And that is why they do it. They intentionally lie and deceive to confuse you.
Welcome to another episode of Healing Through Love. Each week, we share ideas, experiences, and resources to increase the awareness of domestic and family violence and to empower survivors to grow and thrive. We talk with experts who share their advice, or with people who have experienced abuse, no matter where they are on their journey. This is all about healing through love. And now, here are your hosts, Charlene Lynch and Rose Davidson.
Hello and welcome to the Healing Through Love podcast, a space where stories of strength and resilience and transformation unfold. I'm your host, Charlene Lynch, and I'm honored to be your guide on this journey of empowerment and healing. Today, we have a very special episode tailored just for you, whether you're driving the car or sipping a cup of tea or simply taking a moment for yourself. I want you to know that you're in a safe place. Healing Through Love is more than a podcast. It's a community, a beacon of hope, a reminder that you're not alone. In this episode, we have a guest who will share a story that resonates with the core of our mission. A story that illuminates the power of love, resilience, and unwavering strength that lies within each and every one of us. So settle in and take a deep breath and let the healing begin. Before we dive into today's inspiring narrative, a quick reminder that if you find value from our episodes, continue to sponsor us and support us by subscribing, sharing, and leaving your review. Your engagement helps us reach the hearts and the minds of many more with our message of healing. Today's guest is a very special guest. We have Stephanie Ann. She meet this amazing woman. She's an attorney and a recipient of the Governor's Award of Advocacy with Survivors of Domestic Violence, an international best-selling author who triumphs over narcissistic abuse with two marriages. Hello and welcome to the screen.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on your show today.
Oh, thank you for being here. Look, it's a word that's bandied around all over the place. You know, they're a narcissist. Like, I even heard it in the school ground the other day. So, like, could you dive in and give us the definitive definition of the narcissist?
Yeah, you know, speaking of school, so I remember studying about narcissist in Latin and Greek way back in middle school. The narcissist was a man that fell in love with his reflection, and he stayed by the reflecting pool and he never left, and he actually died there. And so a narcissist is someone who must meet certain traits and characteristics. A narcissist has this grandiose sense of self-importance, this deep sense of entitlement. They have this preoccupation with fantasies of unlimited wealth, power, success. And they can only be understood by one person, and that is you. You are the only one that can get them and understand them. But they will exploit anyone to get whatever it is that they need to get their needs met. They have this excessive need for admiration and adoration. They want to be worshipped. They want you to put them on this pedestal, and then do whatever bidding they want done. And they, but they use you. You know, you're only there for a source of supply. You know, you hear that word tossed around, supply. What can you do for them? Can you excessively fawn over them, admire them, give them everything they want? And then when they're done with you, then they just discard you because they've used you up and they've moved on. So narcissists must meet these traits. And sometimes I say it's kind of like a cake. So when you are making a cake, you have all the essential ingredients that go into a cake, right? If you leave any of those essential ingredients out, you no longer have a cake. You have something else. It's the same with a narcissist. To be considered a narcissist, you must have these ingredients, these elements. You need to have the eggs. You need to have the flour. You need to have the sugar. You need to have the baking soda to have a cake. And so many people, I hear them say, well, I have some narcissistic traits. I must be a healthy narcissist. Yeah. No, there is no such thing as a healthy narcissist. A narcissist has all of these traits. A narcissist is the cake. So if you don't have all of those essential ingredients that make up a cake, that make up a narcissist, you are not a narcissist. You are just a person that has, you know, some character flaws. That has some character flaws. But again, a narcissist is someone who portrays themselves to be bigger than life, bigger than they are. They're charming. They are beautiful. They can work a room. They can work anyone. They can manipulate anyone to get what they want. And if you are a victim in their path and they choose you, it's very hard to tell that you're even with a narcissist in the beginning. It's so hard.
Okay. I love this. I love this. I've got to know, how did you as an intelligent woman fall under the spell of not what one, but two? What drew you back into the second time knowing better and still you went back? Like how is that possible?
Yeah. So, you know, with my first husband, in the beginning, again, he was charming. We call the beginning of a relationship with a narcissist the idealization phase. This is where it's great. It's wonderful. They're charming. My whole family adored both of my husbands in the beginning. Both my husbands passed the brother-in-law test. Okay, so my brother-in-law is a former Marine. He's a police sergeant. Narcissists can trick anyone. And so, yes, I'm a highly intelligent woman. I've accomplished all these things. My background was domestic violence. But 20, 30 years ago in domestic violence, we were talking about physical violence. But what happens if your relationship doesn't fit the mold of the traditional domestic violence cycle? But you know the relationship is not right. You know it's off, but you don't know what it is. And again, you know, even 5 years ago, we were not talking about narcissistic abuse like we are today. And so my first marriage, I was with him for 14 years. I didn't know he was a narcissist. So he was a cheater. And so how many of us, we put cheating over here on one side and abuse over here on the other side? Well, they're just cheaters. They just cheat. No, that's psychological and emotional abuse. That's betrayal. That is one of the biggest emotional abuses that you can do against another person. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't fully understand narcissism mm-hmm. and narcissistic abuse. So I didn't have a label for what I went through. And so then you say, well, how do you call it in again? Well, I mean, there's so many things, but a narcissist can trick anyone. You're empathetic. You're caring. You're kind. You have social status. You're secure and confident. These are all things that they value and want, because then they can use you and you can make them look good.
I hear you. I've fallen under the spell of a narcissist, but not in a relationship space, in a work environment. And I found myself doing things that they just weren't on my values base. And it wasn't until I developed more of my own connection with my own values and my own level of self-worth and self-esteem that I was able to say stop. So, like, what can we do to help make the so-called victims to be more resilient so that they can, first of all, have that level of awareness to see this coming and also just not even be remotely attractive to people like that?
Well, I think you said it when you said you found more worthiness within yourself, more self-love within yourself. You were able to set boundaries. And, you know, a boundary is something that is, it doesn't matter. A boundary protects you, you know? And so when we can set boundaries and say, if you do this, if you act this way, if you behave this way, then this is what I'm going to do. And so, you know, with both of my marriages, I thought I had boundaries, but really with my first husband, I was the boundaries police. And how many of us do this? I was confronting the women he was chatting with. I was, don't you know he's married? Stay away. Because he also didn't have boundaries and I didn't have boundaries. So I tried to be his boundaries. But we can't do that. That's not a boundary. And then with my second husband, I thought I had boundaries. But instead, I had a toddler fence. Or like a dog fence, you know, those ones that you can, they're portable and you can turn them into all kinds of shapes. That was my boundary. And so then he would come and push up against my boundary. And instead of me saying, okay, you have come up against my boundary. Now this is what I'm going to do. I would forgive, justify, find other reasons. And I would pick up my little toddler fence and move it somewhere else.
Mm.
So you have to have boundaries, like you said. You have to have that awareness, that self-love, that worthiness.
Mm. So I'm wondering, is there a timeline? So I notice with lots of my friends and also women that we've come in contact with through the Healing Through Love process, they have, you know, there's been a timeline that everything's been okay and then it's not been okay. So is there a timeline that we should sort of be dating them or checking them out before we sort of take that next step? And what I did notice is that many of them have got married very quickly. Like, is there a timeline that we need to be aware of?
Yes. Okay. So if we look at the cycle of narcissistic abuse, there's kind of three main stages. The first stage is the idolization phase, which I started talking about. This is when you're dating. This is when you're figuring someone out. Then you have the devaluation and then you have the discard. So in the idealization phase, when you're first meeting something, the narcissist can charm. They can turn on that charm and they can become the person you want them to become. They mirror you. And so this is why it is so challenging. On top of that beautiful smile and that charm, they're mirroring you. They're mirroring your values. They're mirroring your hobbies. They are mirroring the things that you say about a partner you're looking for. So for instance, my second husband, I manifested him. I made the list. I thought I was ready. You know, there had been about 2 years since my separation from my first husband. And I was like, okay, I must be ready. I'm ready to date. So I made the list. Tall, dark, handsome, divorced dad with just boys, businessman, you know, like I was very specific. And so I throw that out to the universe. A week later, I meet a man who checks everything off on that list. And so when he starts throwing words around like, you are my soulmate, I've been praying for a woman like you, where were you 20 years ago? Does that not feel like it resonates with everything that you
just... It feels
just...
like love bombing.
And so, you know, like, you just don't... It's like, great, it's wonderful. I had just spent 14 years with a husband who was cheating on me. Now here's someone who's like, they're praying for someone like me. We could be soulmates. I mean, gosh, we have every single thing in common. My bucket list, I wanted to sell everything and buy a sailboat and go sail around the world. Oh my God, so does he. Who wants to do that? And so you truly believe because they become whomever they need to become to secure a relationship with you. And so, yeah, it's hard to see the red flags in the beginning because it is so intense. It's so good that you can even like choose to ignore some of the red flags. Yeah, he drank. Well, I didn't know he was hiding vodka bottles and drinking a fifth of vodka every day. I didn't see that. But I chose to ignore some of the heavier drinking that I saw because, man, he wants to buy a sailboat and sail around the world. You know, and so they become all these things and it becomes very intense very quickly. And you talk about deep things. They are the best listeners. I used to say that, oh, both my ex-husbands, they are so good at listening. You can tell them any of your problems. I would tell my girlfriends, go sit with my husband, talk to him. He's wise. And then he'll get your phone number and call you later tonight. But you know, like, so they mirror all of that. And so you don't know that you are slowly falling for something that is not there. You are slowly falling for an illusion because we also want that so badly. We want a good, healthy relationship. We want this perfect person that is everything that we think they are. But truly in the beginning, you end up falling in love with yourself. And so once they have you hooked, once you've shared all your deepest secrets, all your insecurities, all your vulnerabilities, they know everything about you because they are good listeners. And once they, you know, it's like a fairy tale in the beginning. Once they're moving in with you now, you're engaged. And like you said, your friends, it happens quickly. So I always tell people, I'm like, you know, one of the biggest red flags, if it is too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. Slow it down. But then again, it's like, well, I'm older. I'm in my 40s. I know what I want. And what happens when I meet someone that fits everything? How do you know? And so that's why it's very challenging in beginning to know. And so once they have you hooked, you're pregnant, you're engaged, you're moving in together, whatever that hook is where they know that you won't leave the relationship, then they take the mask off. And this is where the devaluation comes. Now, all of a sudden, this perfect person, they start manipulating. They start gaslighting. They start becoming a different person. And this is where all the confusion sets in. Because you're like, wait a second. For the first year that we were together, you were this one person. And now you're this other person. It's like how many of us have heard that, like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde personalities. Both my ex-husbands had them. This is why people walk on eggshells, because you don't know which personality is going to present itself that day. And again, going back to narcissism, narcissist is a disordered personality. And so during the devaluation, the manipulation, the gaslighting. Now, gaslighting is a word that is thrown around a lot right now. But what is gaslighting? Gaslighting is when you manipulate another person into doubting their perceptions, experience, or understanding of events. It's a form of emotional abuse. In fact, it is a highly calculated form of abuse, of manipulation. It's coercive control. And why do they gaslight? They gaslight because it helps them avoid any responsibility. If they can flip the script and say, that didn't happen that way, you were crazy. You drank a lot last night. Don't you remember how much you were drinking? You're being a little crazy. You're the crazy one, not me. If they can flip it around, then they can avoid all responsibility and they put all of that on you. And that is why they do it. They intentionally lie and deceive to confuse you, even when you have the evidence to the contrary. So for instance, I could say, hey, first husband, I know you've been chatting with all these women. No, I haven't. I'm like, you do. Here's the chat log. Oh, Stephanie, you're so petty. We weren't even talking about sex. We weren't talking about anything. Why do you have to do this? Blah, blah, blah. You're so nosy. You're so insecure. Why are you even looking at my phone? Do you see how they flipped it? So now they're not in trouble anymore. And now I feel bad. Oh yeah. Why was I looking at his phone? Why was I doing this? Oh, you don't trust me? It wasn't even a bad conversation. It's just a person from work and we're talking about work stuff or whatever, you know, whatever it is. So it doesn't matter. Even if you present them with the evidence, they will still flip it on you. And over time, gaslighting is so, so harmful because you start to doubt your reality. You start to believe that maybe you are the crazy one. Talk to hundreds of women. And again, this happens with men as well. But, you know, my experience is with male narcissists. But so many women who think they're the narcissist, they think they're bipolar. They think they're crazy because they have just been in these relationships for a very long time and they have become destabilized. And so when you have all of this gaslighting, all of this manipulation, and they can't be horrible all the time because then no one would want to be with them, right? We would figure it out. So now throw in love bombing. So, you know, they might gaslight you. They'll manipulate you. They will get you to live from a place of reaction because if you can emotionally react to everything they do, they have controlled you. So maybe they'll go pout for 3 days. And the whole time they're gone or ignoring you or locked in the bedroom or on the couch, the whole time you are taking it personally. What did I do wrong? Why are they treating me this way? And so then you get all this anxiety, all this worry, all this doubt, all this fear. And they have controlled you. And it is intentional. And so you are miserable for those 3 days. And then they come back and act as if nothing ever happened. Oh, I was thinking we should go out to dinner tonight. Let's get dressed up. Let's go. Where do you want to go? Anywhere you want to go. They send you flowers. They act as if nothing ever happened. And they love bombing. But then when it's good, it's really good. But when it's bad, it's really bad. But we wait for the good because that's at least something. And so all of this intermittent reinforcement of negative and positive and negative and positive creates a trauma bond. And the trauma bond is an attachment, an unhealthy attachment. And so I explain a trauma bond, it's like a drug addiction, you know? So like the first time you try this new drug, you know, whatever it is, you get this influx of all these happy chemicals, this dopamine, serotonin, all the other ones. I'm not a doctor, but you get all these like chemicals and the feel good stuff. And so then you use again. But the next time you use, you don't reach that first high. And so then you keep using. You come down, you use again. You come down, you use again. But you keep hoping for that first high. And similarly, in these trauma-filled relationships, we're reaching for that first person we fell in love with. The person that we fell in love with in the beginning, in the idealization phase, that's who we want. And so we try to become everything that we can think of. Well, what if I lost weight? Well, what if I did this? If I did my hair this way, if I adopted this other personality, then maybe I'd get that first person back that I fell in love with. But that first person you fell in love with was an illusion. They were never there in the first place. So do you see how challenging these relationships are?
Absolutely. So like we've nailed the fact that if we are coming from a space of self-worth, self-esteem and valuing ourselves, we won't be attractive to them in the first place. And we'll see through their challenges because we'll have our boundaries and we'll have our guidelines and we're very values-based. But what if you're already in a relationship? And for those people that are listening today and you're in a relationship and this conversation has pricked your ears and you're seeing some level of awareness here, what do you feel that needs to happen as a next step? Can you call them out? Is this time to get a therapy counseling or is it just time to get out of the relationship?
Yeah. So, you know, your question is perfect because it brings me to the third phase of narcissistic abuse, and that is the discard. And it's exactly what it sounds like. What do we discard? We discard things that no longer serve a purpose in our life. We discard things that we have used up. We discard garbage. And so when a narcissist has run its course with you, when you are no longer useful, when you have just become an empty shell of any spark of life or who you were because you tried to change and become everything that you're not, you're not playing the game. It's a game. They will discard you and move on to the next person because they need that source of supply. So if you're not giving it to them, they will leave and go on to someone else. And so what I tell people is the other way out is with you finding worthiness and love within yourself. And then you take that bold, courageous step of leaving. This is very, very difficult to leave a relationship where you have a trauma bond that you've been trauma bonded to. And so this is why you hear people say, well, it statistically speaking, it takes 6 to 8 times of a person leaving a trauma bonded relationship before they actually leave for good. And so what happens is you try to go. And you come up against this, I call it the terror barrier, this wall. All of a sudden, all the words of the abuser are coming to you. No one will believe you. Where are you going to go? You're not going to find anyone better than me. You know, whatever it is. And so all of a sudden, you have all this worry and doubt on your conscious mind. And a worry and doubt, when you become emotionally involved with it, that creates fear in the subconscious mind. So now there's all this fear. Can I make it? I have no money. Where am I going to go? Who's going to believe me? And then you start manifesting anxiety in the body. And so you leave and you come back. You leave and you come back. But the more you become emotionally involved with the idea that there is good, you will survive. You are empowered. You can get through this. There are people who will support you and help you through all this. Then you start getting emotionally involved with that, and you can crash through the terror barrier, and you can actually leave for good. And so
I love it.
So that,
true. And so you've written a book, is that right, Stephanie?
I've been involved in a compilation book. I wrote about post-traumatic growth, and that is what I'm doing now. So yeah. When you've been through the traumas, you get what we call trauma wisdom. What do we do with that trauma wisdom? We're not meant to stay at home and not do anything with it. And this is why you see so many survivors who are out there involved in women's groups, involved at shelters or working with different advocacy groups, because we need to do something with all this wisdom that we have now.
Absolutely. And love that.
That's my chapter is on that, like post-traumatic growth or something.
It is true. Life happens for us, not to us. And when we can live above that line and know that we are victors, not victims, we change our language, our thought processes, we're no longer attractive to these people. And this is a beautiful segue, Stephanie, to have a chat with our conversation with our audience here today, that if you have been touched by family or domestic violence and you want to make a difference, Healing Through Love is now a global concern. So not only do we run Pamper Days for survivors of family and domestic violence here in Adelaide, we're also teaching people globally how to run them in their own proximity. And just think day spa on steroids. We have a group of 25 practitioners come together to hold that frequency for the day for our survivors. So they get their hair done, their makeup done, think massage, Reiki, you name it, it's all there. It's all there for free. And it's sisters for sisters helping them break those challenging bonds and move forward to another version of what's possible for their lives. So if this sounds remotely interesting, we have a masterclass happening on a monthly basis to show you a little bit more about what it'd be like to hold one of these in your own backyard, so to speak. So reach out to Healing Through Love. We'd love to have a conversation. Stephanie, this has been an amazing conversation. I cannot believe how long we've already been talking, and we could talk for so much longer. But I do want to know, as we're closing, what would be your closing words to our audience today?
Yeah, you know, so many of us, we stay for so long because we think we can change them. We think that if we change all these things about ourselves, if I love them more, if I do this more, if I do that, then I will get that person I fell in love with, that person in the beginning. Know that that person was an illusion. You fell in love with yourself, which means you know how to love. So turn all of that excessive adoration and admiration that you would give that person, turn it inward to you and focus on you and the most loving thing that you can do for yourself and for the narcissist is to let them go.
So powerful. I love it. Thank you so much, Stephanie. This has been a beautiful conversation. That's a goodbye from me and a goodbye from Stephanie.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Healing Through Love. You can get further resources, see the show notes, or simply reach out to us via our website at htlaustralia.org. Thanks so much for joining us, and we look forward to your company next time on the Healing Through Love podcast.